Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Well, you made it. It is Friday. And we've been working really hard to make these super good Friday shows, get great guests, great topics, all that stuff, and maybe not make it absolutely heavy with worldly topics. So you're going to be very pleased with this Friday show. Second hour, Jimmy Akin will be here. It's the feast of Timothy and Titus today. We're going to talk about St. Paul and all of his coworkers. So, and nobody knows it like Jimmy Akin. So hang around for that second hour. First hour, let's talk a bit about beauty, especially the beauty of the everyday. And maybe we could think of it in, I remember Pope John Paul II, I'm sure you remember too, talked a lot about building a culture of life. Well, what about a culture of beauty? And is that connected to what Christ has called us to do and what who Christ has called us to be? Our guest this hour is Dr. Carrie Gress. Dr. Gress is the author, most recently, of The Marian Option, God's Solution to a Civilization in Crisis, which just won a silver medal at the Illumination Awards, which I was just informed about before. And she started a blog called My Favorite Catholic Things. And the blog is about, restoring the beauty of the everyday. Dr. Carrie Gress, thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So first of all, I always feel we have to do this when we're going to talk about beauty. We have to justify ourselves because modern world, beauty is a secondary or tertiary or quadrary or whatever concern.
Right.
It's not at the core of what we do. It has nothing to do with efficiency or making money or so please justify for me why we should talk about beauty.
Well, I mean, the biggest reason, of course, is that beauty is a divine name of God, and we all expect and pray and hope that when we die, we will experience the beatific vision, which is something that we're told is incredibly beautiful. And so beauty is something that, sadly, because of what has happened in the Enlightenment and Enlightenment philosophy, has really been lost as an area of study. And it's fascinating. I've just put together a course for Pontifex University where I go through, survey course of starting with the ancients, particularly Socrates and Aristotle, and come all the way up through the Enlightenment period and see just what deformations have taken place with the concept of beauty. And, we think of art today, I think most of us either see it as a luxury or we think, we've heard the line art for its own sake, but we definitely think of it in very subjective terms. We think it's very personal and there's no criteria that you can judge something as beautiful or not. And so just as a population, we have really lost a sense of what beauty is and why it is important. And yet, ironically, as Catholics, if you go to this is why people go to Europe, because there's these incredibly beautiful churches that are there. And Catholicism has been this huge patron of the arts for centuries. And yet, as Catholics, we don't really understand why it's important in our daily lives. And the fascinating thing is, of course, that, beauty in and of itself by itself isn't that important. We can see that these gorgeous churches in Europe, a lot of them are empty. It's not the beauty of the church that is or isn't drawing them. It's also beauty always has to be linked with goodness and truth. And so my course really goes through those three sisters, if you will, that how they work together and what really ultimately brings us to beauty is seeing it within that context of goodness and truth. Those three things have to work together. And without them, we're sort of left with, we are left with either luxury or lust or greed or avarice, that it can be really deformed and misused, I think.
Dr. Carrie Gress is our guest. We're talking about building a culture of beauty and how that fits with our Catholic faith today. 888-318-7884. You talk about the beautiful churches, and I actually am of the mind, at least from what I have seen, that Catholics are doing a better job in building churches in recent years, that people have returned to the idea that they shouldn't just be like community center spaces, but really should be beautiful.
Right. Yes. And that is a recurrent trend that is obviously so welcome. But one of the things that I see just since I've been working on this concept of beauty, is that there's a big gap, though, between those who really understand the language of architecture and the beautiful, and then your average Catholic in the pews. I think we sort of have an intuitive sense of what's beautiful,
right,
but we don't really know the language of it. You know, what's the difference between a Romanesque church, a Gothic church, you know, these kinds of things, or even, you know, what's a nave, these kinds of elements about church architecture that are just foreign to us. And, you know, one of the things that I thought of that could help tremendously is, even if, you know, someone started one of these renovation shows on churches, I think this would be an incredible way to really help bring people up to speed on what all these things mean. And certainly
what
there are plenty
cool
of them.
Idea. So yeah, you're going to do that. You're going to do like.
I'm working on.
Wait, what's the what are the ones that they make on TV? Like some of these house renovation shows.
Yeah, you know? Fixer Upper.
Like Fixer Upper. Yeah. So like Fixer Upper Catholic Church.
Right. 5 years ago, nobody in the world had any idea what shiplap was. And recently when I was in Birmingham filming something at EWTN, on my way back to the airport from the studios, there was a new development there, and they were advertising shiplap in this. It's everywhere. I mean, people know what shiplap is now. And I think that this could be done very easily, you know, and there's certainly enough drama behind these events to make it something that I think people would really enjoy. But so that's my suggestion. But no, unfortunately, I don't have the resources to be filming that myself. But I think it's...
You need one more thing to do, Dr. Grass.
Yeah,
you need one more thing to
exactly.
do. In addition to raising children and teaching classes and writing books and talking to me, you need to do a church fixer-upper show. Let me give out the number, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. We're talking about beauty. I have to say, one of the things that maybe baffles the modern person is this idea that beauty is in the eye of the beholder. That this is a very modern idea that, what's beautiful to me is not beautiful to you. And so maybe you want to talk to Dr. Grass just about what beauty is and how are we supposed to think about beauty. 888-318-7884. Daniel Mattson, the very fine writer, posted something, a YouTube clip yesterday that got me thinking about this, about the domestic church. It was a video about the domestic church in medieval period and how much people in the medieval period valued having beautiful things in their home as a way of supporting the spiritual life. For example, having a picture of Christ crucified or Christ the Good Shepherd or something in the house was thought very, very important to medieval Catholics, even poor medieval Catholics, as a way of having beauty and making sure that life wasn't just in the everyday, I guess, to move it into a different plane. Your thoughts on beauty in the domestic church?
Yeah, and I think that's really also at the heart of what I want to do with this blog. I mean, that's the best thing about a blog is there's so many things that I would like to talk about, so I can sort of piecemeal them out every few times each week. But you see that also in the Orthodox Church. I mean, icons were such a huge thing that, you know, the family would come home and they would go to their icon and pray before the icon, you know, both before they left and they when they returned to their home. So yes, these are things that were absolutely treasured. And it was really a recognition that Christ is present among us and that art and the beautiful can elevate us and lift our hearts in a way that, you know, we're not going to get from, you know, kitschy things and, you know, plastic items from China. Now, of course, there's a place for those kinds of things, but I think that there's also just there's a gift of craftsmanship. And a lot of these items that are being made and have been made have the capacity and ability to lift us up. But you can also see that it's not limited just to items. You can also see it even in the saints. I think Mother Teresa is a perfect example of this. I mean, how many people refer to her as so beautiful, and yet she was not a beautiful woman. I mean, she was very old and wrinkly, and you know, exactly. So, but there's this beauty that comes through, this ineffable kind of beauty that we can't really quantify. And that's one of the struggles with talking about beauty. And there are ways of, there is criteria that we can talk about beauty, that we can measure it to a certain degree, but there is this subjective and almost ineffable piece to it that makes it very difficult to talk about. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's sort of dropped off the radar, because everybody's gotten used to this idea that's subjective and it's for its own sake. And in fact, during the medieval period, it was clearly not for its own sake, but it was to help us, come to know God through it.
Yeah, and I have to say, you use the word kitsch, and I know that you're, like, as you said, we may have emotional attachments to kind of kitschy mm-hmm. type objects, and that's fine.
Right.
That's important.
Right.
But the beauty of an object is not I'll just tell you a little anecdote and see if this illustrates my point. Years ago, my wife and I go to an auction for a Catholic school, and we happened to win this little detailed painting of the Virgin Mary. That's a hand painted piece, and it's absolutely beautiful little Virgin Mary. And mm-hmm. put that up in our house, and I can't tell you over the years how many times that painting has come into my view or come into my consciousness. And I think it's better to have, in my view now, just having had that experience, it's better to have one fine, mm-hmm. beautiful thing than a whole house full of kind of Catholic kitsch, you know, that
right.
that one thing makes a real difference, that one beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, actually the other day I was listening to this old DVD or CD rather of Scott Hahn talking about this, and he was talking about families, how we should actually put in our budgets money to buy either one nice piece a year or something that we can put in our homes, because it speaks volumes to our children as well, that this is something that's really important to us that we will invest in. And there's a relationship, I think, that the children end up having with that kind of art when they see it in their home. I've got the opposite example. I've got this statue of Our Lady that I've had for years and years, and I will, unless it breaks, I will never stop using it. It was my father's, and when he died, he had it with him, and it was lit when he died, and it's something that I've got this strong emotional attachment to. But can I objectively say it's striking and beautiful? Well, no. But there is an emotion. So I think we also have those kinds of things in our lives that are important. But we can also make distinctions between things that are have an emotional attachment to versus what objectively is a beautiful item that just creates a sense of wonder and moves you, maybe like a sunset or the ocean, these kinds of things. Dietrich von Hildebrandt has this great discussion about beauty, that it's not a luxury, that it's every man needs it, that we require it. And it doesn't have to be something that's expensive, but even tailoring our vacations around beautiful things is important.
We're talking about building a culture of beauty, especially for Catholic people to consider the modern kind of dismissal of beauty, and that is not part of the Catholic tradition. The Catholic tradition is to embrace the beautiful and to seek the beautiful and to try to live among the beautiful. 888-318-7884 is our number, 888-318-7884. We have to take a break, Dr. Gress, but I'm going to leave you with a question to ponder a little bit, because as a child, I can remember some religious art actually kind of putting me off religion a little bit because it had that kitschy, kind of almost scary quality. As a child, it felt very unreal, and I'm going to go so far as to say even a little bit creepy. And so I want to talk to you about the possibility that if we attach ourselves too much to ugly things or things that really don't have that quality of beauty, we can miss the opportunity to invite other people into the world of beauty that Christ intends for us. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with Dr. Cary Gress on Catholic Answers Live right after this.
This is Bishop Chad Zielinski from the Diocese of Fairbanks of Northern Alaska, and you are listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, this is Trent Horn, and I'm here with a couple of very special offers for all of you interested in standing up for the rights of the unborn. January is Pro-Life Month, and to get as many people as we can involved in the pro-life cause, we're making my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, and my DVD, Making the Case for Life, available for just $5 each. That's a saving of over 70%. I wrote this book and I made this DVD specifically with you in mind, to help you engage in sustained and meaningful dialogue and give you the tools you need to change people's hearts and minds, so that together we might build up a pro-life culture, one person, one conversation at a time. To get your copies of my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, or my DVD, Making the Case for Life, for just $5, call 1-888-291-8000 or visit the shop at catholic.com.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is that now there is. Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking resource by apologist Trent Horn. That one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into or back to The Practice of the Catholic Faith. And at $3 a copy when purchased in bulk, it's perfect for parish distribution and any of your adult faith formation needs. And in an effort to get copies into as many hands as possible, this weekend we're offering free media mail shipping within the continental United States. There's simply no better time to place your order. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic Today by calling 1-888-291-8000 or visiting the shop at Catholic.com.
Pope Francis said, "The key that opens the door to faith is prayer." Join St. Paul Street Evangelization by running a prayer station in the public square. You don't need to be a professional apologist or theologian. Just listen to the needs of the people you encounter. Offer encouragement, take prayer requests, and pray with people. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. We have a baby in the studio, so I got to wave to the baby while we're talking. Dr. Carrie Gress is our guest, and we're talking about building a culture of beauty and maybe about, to some degree, how beauty has been trivialized in the modern era. And it's not a trivial thing. It's actually very important in our development as human beings and our coming closer to God and our coming closer to one another and our living fully human lives. Our number, if you'd like to talk about beauty and maybe what the modern struggle over beauty, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. It's not true that we all have an equal appreciation for beauty, however. I mean, I kind of poo-pooed the idea of beauty is in the eye of the beholder because it's not what we believe as Catholics, because there is such a thing as objectively beautiful and objectively not beautiful. But you were reminding me at the break that there is a way in which beauty is in the eye of the beholder is true.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I think Thomas Aquinas described it as more of a relationship where you've got to have somebody who's disposed to beauty in a certain respect already in order to be able to see it. But he also has a criteria that he says can help us understand what beautiful things are. And a lot of it comes from the ancients, and it's things like proportion, symmetry, light, clarity. These different kinds of elements can certainly play into it. And I have to say, I've been really impressed. The work of David Clayton is something that I've gotten very excited about, because he actually goes in, he's an artist, and he had this huge conversion by going into a church and seeing a gorgeous liturgy in England. And that's really what's kicked off his own conversion back or to the church. Excuse me. But so he's written a book on all of these kinds of details, like sacred geometry, the numbers that are involved, proportion, all of these kinds of things that actually give you the nitty gritty. But you have to be the kind of person that has even an interest in that or an eye for it. I think a lot of us don't necessarily have that, but it can be trained too. It's not something that we either have or we don't have.
Right.
And that's one of the misunderstandings also that the Enlightenment has brought to us, is this sense that, you know, it's almost this secret knowledge that, you know, only a few people have this ability to create things. And yet it's not that at all. It's that we can all be trained to see it better. My husband's a huge fan of architecture, and I didn't really have any interest in it whatsoever until I met him. And now I look at a building so much more differently. I'm training my children to know what columns are, the names of columns, and all of these kinds of things that I was completely blind to before. So, it can be taught, that's for sure.
888-318-7884, the number. Dr. Carrie Gress is our guest. I want to tell you something about my wife, because who's also visiting here in the studio today, but she went through a period where she read Willa Cather and one after another of Willa Cather's novels. And then when she was done, she said, "Willa Cather kind of ruins you for any kind of mediocre literature, because she's so good,"
right.
You know?
Right.
And there's a way in which beauty does that. It there's a very positive side to it. It elevates you, and you appreciate things in a new way.
Mm-hmm.
But it also kind of destroys your old appreciations, where you're like, wow,
right.
that really wasn't beautiful.
Sure.
I, yeah.
Right. No, and I think that's a great point, and that's a point that's been made for centuries. Socrates, actually, in Plato's works, says things like beauty is a kind of remembering, and it takes us to a higher place. He talks about having these wings and being able to see more clearly, and I think that's what beautiful art does. That's what beautiful literature does. What beautiful music does. Is it kind of reorients us. And this is how we can see how it's related to the beatific vision, because the closer that you get to authentic beauty, the more you can see it sort of mapping on to who God is, and all of those other things that we thought were beautiful or we thought were important kind of fall to the wayside. And so it's this ladder of beauty in addition to just being a ladder of love, that there's a real connection there.
I really like that phrase, a ladder of beauty. And before we go to calls, because we do the calls are starting to pile up here, but I do tend to monopolize you when I have you on. But just a thought, any thought as a mother and a scholar on children and the exposure to beauty, how important is it that there be beautiful things in the home for children?
Sure. Yeah, no, I think it's incredibly important for this reason we just talked about, because of the fact that if you are can expose them to things that are beautiful and they can kind of understand why they're beautiful to a limited degree, then that can really prepare them to start seeing beauty in much more rich ways. And I think there's also, of course, we haven't talked about moral beauty, like what it be, seeing beauty in people may not have, like Mother Teresa, they might not have the outward appearance of being beautiful, but do we see the beauty that shines through them for moral reasons, and trying to help children, especially to see that in humanity when you've got people who are broken and whatnot, and not to be allured by those who are just simply attractive, but just to really see those virtues and the truth behind it. That trinity of beauty, truth, and goodness, that
that's
linking
the,
those together in their life, I think, is really can be a cornerstone of their education.
888-318-7884, the number. Let's go to our first caller, Lori, in Atlanta, Georgia, listening on the iHeartRadio app. You are on with Dr. Carrie Gress. Lori, your question, please.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. So it was funny when you first started talking about the renovating home. It reminded me of an Anthony Eslin article where he was talking about the modern music and how after we were kind of bereft after Vatican II with nothing, and so folk music filled its place. But it's funny, I did not have that in my choir. We did the traditional music, not so much Gregorian chant, but other things. But he talked about how we need to peel back these layers and get rid of the linoleum floor of, just music and get back to the beautiful music. And so maybe think of that. But my children, I raised them. I mean, we listened to all kinds of music, but they listened to classical. They listened to Gregorian chant. And to this day, they're 16. They don't like the youth math. They don't really like that music too much. And I'll listen to that Christian rock in the radio and then in the car, and it's fun and it's whatever. But I almost feel like the math should be different. It should be set aside in something more beautiful and, as you were saying, elevated. And I see examples of choirs around the country and places where we used to live where the children are learning these traditional and beautiful forms of music, very much resting in that mathematical perfection you talked about. And the children, they embrace it, and it's beautiful. And I think absolutely training the children. I had a friend who is a organist at a church, and I was talking to her about this, and she said, well, we don't want to play the old songs because no one knows them. Mm-hmm. I said, well, why does no one know them?
That's kind of a self-defeating prophecy there.
You know, the folk songs is because that's all you play. If you play the other ones, they know those too.
Right, right, that comfort level. Yeah, I thank you for your call. I think that's a great point as far as what children have the capacity to learn and to appreciate. And I think by and large, we really underestimate children's capacity to be able to see beauty, to be able to perform beauty, and even to connect with beauty in dramatic ways. And so I think that by elevating that's something where they can get a sense of wonder. They can be moved by hearing music and or even being a performing it themselves. My daughter has joined a choir, and she's just been loving the experience. And I can just see how it's really, her ear is being trained, and she's, has a much more sensibility, a greater sense of what beautiful music is versus what it isn't. And so I think those are, again, we have to train people in our parishes instead of just accepting this lowest common denominator when we have so much abundance in our church to pull from. You know, why do we have to stick with these five songs or this one hymn book? Why can't we branch out and do some other things that will reach people in different ways too, I think.
Lori, thank you very, very much for that call. Dr. Gress's blog, if you'd like to know more about restoring everyday beauty, myfavoritecatholicthings.com, myfavoritecatholicthings.com. You know, Dr. Gress, as you were speaking about children and their exposure to beauty and your daughter in the choir and all that, I'm thinking about something that's a little bit, maybe a pet peeve of mine, but lots and lots of schools, and including Catholic schools, now want to be what are called STEM schools, science, technology, mm-hmm. engineering, and math. And this is thought to be the height of what a great school can be, is a STEM school.
Right.
I don't think it is the height of what a school should be. It's not high enough. That, mm-hmm. Having choirs and bands for and art classes, these things are not trivial. They are important.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that there's a lot to be said for even, I mean, we're sort of glorifying the math and sciences, but there's languages in music that I think help us dramatically to use a different part of our brain, help with all kinds of things that are intangible that we're not necessarily going to see in science, but we're going to see in our communication levels. And I think that's
true. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Dr. Carrie Gress. And I'll get to the phones. I'm sorry I've been so lax about getting to the phones. I just enjoy my conversations with Dr. Gress. We'll be right back after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live. The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I went to Las Vegas years and years ago for one of these cable shows. And I was shocked to see all these old ladies in their 70s and 80s getting off that plane, running for a slot machine. You don't have a chance to win. They're all fixed. I know. My uncle used to have slot machines.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
January is Pro-Life Month, and to get as many people as we can involved in the pro-life cause, we're making Trent Horn's book, Persuasive Pro-Life, and his DVD, Making the Case for Life, available for just $5 each. That's a savings of over 70%. Both the book and the DVD were made specifically with you in mind, to help you engage in sustained and meaningful dialogue, and to give you the tools you need to change people's hearts and minds so that together we might build up a pro-life culture, one person, one conversation at a time. To get your copies of the book, Persuasive Pro-Life, or the DVD, Making the Case for Life, for just $5 each, just call 1-888-291-8000 or visit the shop at Catholic.com.
Did you know that there's a place you can turn first that features the newest, most exciting Catholic resources, as well as a huge selection by some of the best Catholic authors and speakers on the planet? It's our online store at shop.catholic.com. All of our offerings are time-tested and apologist-vetted and trustworthy and faithful to the teachings of the Catholic Church. And, of course, the lights are always on for your shopping convenience. It's one-stop shopping made affordable and easy. Shop.catholic.com.
Welcome back to our Super Friday edition of Catholic Answers Live. As I've been saying, Jimmy Akin will be here second hour. We'll talk about Timothy and Titus. It's their feast today. And we're going to talk a little bit about St. Paul and his co-workers, Timothy and Titus being two of the primary co-workers and earliest bishops of the church. Hang around for that. This hour, we're talking about beauty and building a culture of beauty. Dr. Carrie Gress is our guest. Her new blog is myfavoritecatholicthings.com, and it has all to do about beauty. This is also Pro-Life Month or Sanctity of Life Month, so I want to remind you that if you go to shop.catholic.com, you can have Trent Horn's book, Persuasive Pro-Life, for just $5, or you can have his video. Let me make sure I get the title right. Making the Case for Life. That's also for $5. And for the entire weekend, they're also throwing in Why We're Catholic, the perfect book to give to non-Catholics who, or even Catholics who want to know more about their Catholic faith. It's free shipping on Trent's book, Why We're Catholic. I just trying to get Trent's stuff out of here, I guess. So all kinds of Trent Horn deals there at shop.catholic.com. Dr. Gress, as I said, I've been remiss in getting to calls. So how about we go straight back to the phones?
Great.
Eddie in Erie, Pennsylvania, you are on with Dr. Carrie Gress. Your question, please, Eddie.
Hi, Carrie. I was wondering, what would Christ consider to be beauty?
What would Christ consider to be beauty? Well, this is an interesting question. I think given that, and this is the ancient perspective, or medieval perspective. We can see this in Augustine. We can see this in Boethius. I mean, it goes all the way up through the many saints, Saint Bonaventure, Saint Thomas Aquinas, Duns Scotus. And the reality is that they all saw beauty as a reflection of God, it was an expression of him, in some cases very dim, in other cases brighter. But that's really how they articulated and expected it. And so Christ, of course, being God, even though, you know, in his woundedness or, you know, in his crucifixion, he doesn't strike us as beautiful. I mean, in some ways, in fact, the other day I was with my son in adoration and he's 3 years old and he looked up at the crucifix and said, "What happened to him?" You know, it's sort of horrified by the nails. And I think we forget that. So yes, it's very off-putting and can be scary. And yet I think that that's like why when you put together goodness, beauty, and truth, there's something pops, something different happens. It's this combination of things that happen in a way that something ineffable comes about. And I guess it's one of the things that I love about beauty too. And why I was motivated to do this blog was because it seems like we get so many arguments in our day about whether it's apologetics, politics, you know, you name it, there's going to be an argument for it. And yet beauty is a different kind of argument. It gets to people in places where they're not thinking about things and or you're thinking about and feeling things in a different way. And I think there's certainly a large population of a large number of the people in the population that are attracted to it and feel it in a different way and are moved by it. And so that, I think that's an important piece of it, is remembering how much that can affect our brothers and sisters and why that's important to use these symbols on a daily basis and to really wrap our minds around what it is. Well, it's a reflection of who God is, and try and see that even when it's like Mother Teresa, not glamorous and well put together.
Eddie, how does that strike you?
That sounds a good answer. I would just add, Proverbs, beauty is fleeting, applying to women mm-hmm. or anyone else, right. I guess men too. Mm-hmm. And humility mm-hmm. is what he talks about mostly.
Right.
And
exactly. No, I think you're making my point. I mean, humility is good and true, and that's what really makes beauty beautiful. If we detach goodness and truth from beauty, then what we are left with is something that will be fleeting, will lead to greed, avarice, vice, you know, all of these kinds of things that we're trying to avoid. And this is why it's so important that all of these pieces we see them together instead of just as, you know, the superficial rendering of you know, beautiful woman or what have you.
Eddie, thanks very, very much for that call. We go
Thank
now
you.
To William in Little Rock, Arkansas, listening on the EWTN app. William, you are on with Dr. Carrie Gress. Your question, please.
Yes, thank you. I have one detailed question and one very short follow-up question. Mm-hmm. For our little family, our little Catholic family, what's mm-hmm. the best way to get the biggest gulp of beauty in today's fast-paced society? Is it visiting Gothic churches, or is it attending a Latin mass, or listening to Gregorian chants? What would you advise? Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that it's some of it has to do with your own interests and your own family and things that you and your wife are excited about. And like I mentioned before, my husband loves architecture, and so we spend a lot of time looking at buildings and different things that attract us, that we're attracted to in churches and whatnot. But music is another, can be another important element. So it really depends on where you guys feel led as a family. But of course, there are some incredible resources out there, I think, now that New Liturgical Movement is a great website that I was saying the other day. I was talking to one of the architects that advertises on that website, and I said, you know, the New Liturgical Movement is the one website where I look forward to seeing the ads almost more than the content, because the ads are stunning. They're all these by all these different architects as well as different craftsmen, and so it's a fun place to visit for many reasons. So, yeah, I think the biggest thing is, but the other reality is that culture is almost, it's like water. It's either polluted or it's clean. And so we live in a very polluted culture. And so trying to push out some of that with something more pure and beautiful can really be really important. So all those things that you listed, whether it's music, liturgy, architecture, icons, what have you, all of those help push something that's full of content that's good and push out the other things that are bad in our culture that we're trying to avoid. And I think they bring a joy and a freedom, especially to our children, in a way that you're not going to find when you're, you know, just flipping through TV stations and dealing with so much violence and rage and other, unsavory elements that we see in TV.
Okay, William?
Yes. Yes, I was. The other thing I was going to ask is for you to repeat the name of the author, of the fellow who was converted during the beautiful liturgical service.
Yes, his name is David Clayton, and he has a website, blog called The Way of Beauty, and also a book with that same name. And it's just a fantastic book as far as giving you particulars about beauty in paintings and whatnot, in churches as well.
William, may I ask you a question? With your children, is the idea that you want to expose them to beauty because you want them to have interior lives? Because it does seem to me that one of the things that our culture just hates is for anybody to have an interior life. I'm just trying to get at your motivation as a father.
That is exactly it. And we have found, for example, one of the things that we've already done was to have our kids carefully and in increments sit through Bishop Barron's series on Catholicism.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we would point out the beauty of the church as well as the beauty of the churches and the faces of the individual worshipers as they revered our Lord, and asked them how they felt at Mass and how they regard our church, and attempt to build constructively step by step with them a solid interior life.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what our society does to buffet it, they can experience their own inner grounding and their own inner knowledge of what's really beautiful.
William, thanks very much. Dr. Gress,
thank you. No, it sounds great. I think that's really the key is we can teach our children things, but unless there's something really interiorly grounding them and that is has a mature element to it, it's very difficult to keep them in the faith, especially once they, you know, when and if they go to college, then you're really in trouble, and that's where the rubber hits the road. So I think having that piece in place from an early age is crucial.
Melody in Portland, Oregon. Again, William, thank you for that call. Melody in Portland, Oregon, listening on the Catholic Answers app. You are on with Dr. Carrie Gress. Melody, your question.
Hi. Thank you so much for this topic. I wanted to share that in my life, beauty was presented to me as a child, not simply in the arts, but in the everyday home. And every meal was a time for my mother to set a beautiful table, not only the dinner meal, but also at breakfast. It was, I don't know, something she planted in all of us, that dinner time was, or eating together was a special time. And even though she was not wealthy by any means, in fact, I remember even all of us saving for special dishes, you know, to have on the table. She simply set a very pretty table. And that planted a seed of love in beauty in myself and all of my siblings. And because it was honored every day. And I just wanted to make that comment. Thanks for listening.
No, I'm really glad that you did, Melanie. Thank you for calling. I'm actually from Oregon, so I have a soft spot in my heart for the beauty of Oregon, that's for sure. But absolutely. I think that there's a lot to be said for these small things that we do that don't require a lot of money. And if you look at the monastic tradition, this is really what it goes back to, is this idea that you can be poor, but you're going to take good care, very good care of the things that you have. and respect these rituals, respect the relationships that you have with your family. And I think that's certainly a lost art. And, you know, even if we can do it once, you know, Saturday night together in honor, kind of a feast in preparation for the Sabbath, or, you know, for Sunday, I think that that is a great goal to start with, because the domestic church is really a key of restoring what is beautiful and restoring the faith.
Melody, thanks very much for sharing that.
Oh. You're welcome.
All right. Well, we have to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Dr. Carrie Gress as we discuss a culture of beauty, especially from a Catholic perspective. We'll be right back with more of that and your calls after this.
It's all about the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
January is Pro-Life Month, and to get as many people as we can involved in the pro-life cause, we're making Trent Horn's book, Persuasive Pro-Life, and his DVD, Making the Case for Life, available for just $5 each. That's a savings of over 70%. Both the book and the DVD were made specifically with you in mind, to help you engage in sustained and meaningful dialogue, and to give you the tools you need to change people's hearts and minds, so that together we might build up a pro-life culture, one person, one conversation at a time. To get your copies of the book Persuasive Pro-Life or the DVD Making the Case for Life for just $5 each, just call 1-888-291-8000 or visit the shop at Catholic.com.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is that now there is. Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking resource by apologist Trent Horn. That one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into or back to the practice of the Catholic faith. And at $3 a copy when purchased in bulk, it's perfect for parish distribution and any of your adult faith formation needs. And in an effort to get copies into as many hands as possible, this weekend we're offering free media mail shipping within the continental United States. There's simply no better time to place your order. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today by calling 1-888-291-8000 or visiting the shop at Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We are talking about building a culture of beauty, restoring beauty in our everyday lives. Dr. Carrie Gress is our guest. Her blog related to this topic is myfavoritecatholicthings.com. I really recommend you go check it out because as I was saying to you, Dr. Gress, I think it is beautiful itself. You made a beautiful thing there, that blog.
Thank you.
I also want to mention the book, The Marian Option, God's Solution to a Civilization in Crisis. The basic thesis of the book being that Mary is at work today trying to help our civilization become a civilization of love and life and light and all that. And we should probably be cooperating with her in that work, which I think that's a pretty good thesis. So pick up the Marian Option, God's Solution to Civilization in Crisis. Many people on the phone, I want to continue to keep going back to the calls and not leave anybody hanging. Scott in Cincinnati, Ohio, listening on Sacred Heart Radio. Scott, you are on with Dr. Carrie Gress. Your question, please. Oh, it's a little hard to hear you, Scott. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but maybe get that phone as close as you can to your mouth. And if it's on speaker, take it off speaker, okay?
Hello?
Oh, hey, yeah, give it a try, Scott. I think we can hear you now.
Okay. So I've had the gift of being able to live in very beautiful places. And my life circumstance now, I live in somewhere which I would consider not as beautiful as those previous places. And so my question really is, how can I appreciate, you know, the beauty that exists here, that, you know, God created Ohio just as much as he, you know, created beautiful ocean sunsets and everything else.
Mm-hmm. They don't have ocean sunsets in Ohio? I got to look at a map. Okay. Dr. Gress, your response to Scott.
You know, I can really relate to this, Scott. I appreciate your call and your question because I lived in Oregon, which it's just an incredibly beautiful state. You've got oceans, you've got mountains, it's green, it's just an incredible place. So, and then I moved to Ohio for a while, and I really found myself struggling. And one of the things that, there were two things that happened. One was I started appreciating a different kind of beauty and looking for it in different ways. Instead of expecting a huge vista to open up that was going to be gorgeous, I became fascinated. There's near Franciscan University, there's a where I did my master's degree, there's a cutout of where they put a highway in. And I just became really fascinated with the different layers that were there, the different colors that were in the layers. So I think, you know, on the one hand, you can find new things to look at. They might not be as big as and as grand, but they're certainly going to be there. And I think that is another way that we can train ourselves to start seeing beauty in different ways. And then the second point I would make is sort of related, and that is that, you know, God might be wanting you to look for beauty in icons, in artwork, and or even obviously there's incredible landscapes that are made. I just got a catalog that's got a photograph of one of the lakes that I used to spend a lot of time on, and I love this catalog for that reason. So you know, I'm going back to that. But I even looking for icons or looking at different religious articles that maybe he wants to bring you to a different place to see a different kind of beauty and to train your own eye, because you obviously have it if you're already appreciating outside the beauty of the outdoors. And maybe God wants to elevate that a little bit, would be my one suggestion.
Scott?
Great. Yeah, I think it was a great idea.
I feel like I have to stick up for Ohio for both of you, though. I mean, my recollections of Ohio when I drive through there are rolling hills and red barns. And do I have an idealized view of Ohio? Is it horrible there? I thought it was beautiful.
No, I wouldn't say it's horrible. But when you've lived in a place where I think it's a contrast.
Yeah. I always wonder that about Hawaiians. Like, okay, then they go somewhere. Right. Like, nothing else is as beautiful as that. Like, why would you? Like, okay, right, I see.
Yeah, I think it's a contrast.
Scott, you had a follow-up.
Yeah, just one thing that has helped me, just a quick thing, is I like to think when I'm in the middle of a concrete jungle that, you know, oh, I'm not in the forest. There's no forest around here. But really, I'm still in the forest. It's just that man has removed it from this area.
Yeah. Well, that, you know, thanks, Scott, very much for that call. I was mentioning to you, Dr. Gress, at the break, just a little bit of reading I did in Pope Francis's letter Laudato Si, and he has a very human-centered view of environmentalism that I don't think people pay enough attention to. And it is true that much of the world has been rendered ugly by, you know, like he'll talk about the rivers in India being just a human being can't even hardly live near some of these. Or the atmosphere in a city like Beijing, you know, or just the as Scott was talking about, the concrete jungles and other places, and that a Catholic vision is of environmentalism, and not just environment, but in the sense of plants and animals and all that, but the environments we live in, is that it is inhumane to make places that are so focused on, you know, just production of goods or exploitation of resources that they become physically ugly places to live in. That actually does diminish the quality of the lives of people. And the Pope points out the poor are affected more than anyone.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, I even had the experience a few weeks ago of walking through a mall, and I was just struck by, because I was thinking about beauty, and it's was just amazing to me how low and how base the values that were being communicated through the clothing. It was just a matter of, you know, either get more or this is a way to make you appealing. And anything deeper than that is largely lost. And I think that's a real issue. It's not just a matter of the environment, but it's when it's in our stores and, you know, that we deal with on a daily basis.
Scott, thanks very, very much for that call. We go now to John in northern New Jersey. John, you are on with Dr. Carrie Gress. Your question, John.
Hi, sorry. This is John. Thanks for taking my call.
Happy to.
Yeah, I had a question. Many, many years ago, I was engaged to a very attractive woman who was from Ireland. And
Well, you won the lottery then.
What? Yeah, right. And it seemed that way. And, you know, my family admired her very much. You know, and once my uncle, you know, was talking to me, and he said, you know, when I was a teenager, we used to go to these dances, and all these Irish girls right off the boat were there, and boy, were they ugly. And I'm thinking about that. He said, back in the old days, regular folks didn't use makeup that much. And I'm wondering if the preponderance of cosmetics has lessened our ability to appreciate natural beauty.
Well, first of all, there's never been an ugly Irish girl, but you can take the rest of that of that question, Dr. Grass, as far as cosmetics go.
Yeah, John, no, I think it's a great and fascinating question, but I think that there's so many different tentacles that are associated with it, because I think the onset of cosmetics happened not simultaneously, but probably prior to, but really became much more important during the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. You know, it's just something that has almost gone hand in hand, I think, with the women's liberation movement. And so, I think it's a question that is fascinating to me, because one of the things that I see is that cosmetics and beauty has become much more important, especially the older you get. And, you know, if you look around, there's a lot of people who are growing older. And there's a real effort and an energy to look much, 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 much younger. And it's not just cosmetics. It's the way that we dress and the way that clothes are promoted and are marketed to women, even in their 80s and 90s. And so it's fascinating to me to sort of see how much we focus on those external things instead of even the internal things that really make us authentically beautiful. And we've sort of given into this shallow sense of what beauty means and gotten away from that trifecta of goodness, truth, and beauty in our own lives, and realizing that that's really where that deep core is going to make a woman much more beautiful than any cosmetics will. I think it's a great question, but there's a lot to it, I think, for our culture.
Okay, John?
Hello?
Hey, John? Yes?
Was I cut off? Oh, I'm sorry. I had a tone came on this end. I just think it's a challenge to me. And I've actually been affected by it, you know, growing up as a teenager, where I had the outspoken guys in the gang would judge women who weren't advertising too much, you know, decent looking girls and who were basically labeled as ugly, you know, and I thought back, and that's so sad, you know, cause you know, I've come to a conclusion, and I tell my religious ed kids, you know, modesty is the great equalizer. That's the thing that gives everybody a fair break, you know, and people who overdo it, you know, they distract away from the true community action, and I'm not sure if I'm thinking of the right term.
No, it is. There's a kind of selfishness to immodesty.
We truly appreciate each other.
Mm-hmm. Right, and obviously it tears away the dignity of the girl who is immodest. There was a study done recently about how who's distracted by immodesty in schools. And of course, you know, everybody thinks that of course the boys are, but actually the girl who's dressed immodestly is also very much affected by the way that she's dressed, because she begins to view herself as an object, and she's always constantly on display. And I think that that's a real important piece for us to keep in mind, you know, when we're dressing ourselves. And, you know, this came up actually when I was looking for a wedding dress. I was astounded. There was one designer that I knew her, and I contacted her, and I said, you know, I want that dress from Sound of Music that Maria von Trapp wore. You know, it's long sleeves, it's silk, it's stunning. And she said, and I said, you don't have any dresses that are long sleeve, do you? And she said, I can't sell them. People will not buy a long sleeve wedding gown. And gratefully, I ended up finding something in Spain. I was living in Italy at the time, but it's hard to find things that, and that's sort of the rub, is we want to encourage ourselves, our daughters, and to be modest, but you got to be able to find things that are actually modest that we can purchase. So it's really a difficult task, I think, that mothers have.
Well, I don't want to criticize you, but the Von Trapps just made them out of the curtains. So maybe you're just not industrious
enough.
Those
silk curtains, exactly. I know. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, just tear the curtains down and make yourself a dress. Come on.
Exactly. What was I thinking?
Well, thank you very much, John, for that. But as we come to the conclusion of this hour, I will ask people again to visit myfavoritecatholicthings.com, Dr. Carrie Gress's website. But having a beautiful woman as as a central religious figure for us Catholics is actually a really good thing, I think, in part because it helps men not to do to women what John was talking about, just treat women as an object, and give a sense that feminine beauty is valued by God. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think she's this huge impulse why we have huge reason why we have so much beauty in the church. Much of it is about her. But I think there's something about that feminine nature that brings it to life much more so than what we see in other faiths.
The book is The Marian Option, God's Solution to a Civilization in Crisis. That's Dr. Carrie Gress's latest book. She has many others as well. And again, that website, myfavoritecatholicthings.com. Dr. Carrie Gress, thanks so much. I always really enjoy
Thank
it when you're on the
time.
Show with us.
That's my pleasure. Thank you.
Next hour, we continue with our super fun Friday. Jimmy Akin will be here with us, and it being the Feast of Timothy and Titus, we're going to talk about St. Paul and his co-workers, among whom were Timothy and Titus, among the most impressive of whom were Timothy and Titus. We'll be right back for that fantastic hour right after this on Catholic Answers Live.